The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
Come on in, everybody, on this 12th day of July 2019. This is the first of two talk shows that we will spend together today. Whoa! Am I coming back for Prager? No. I'm doing that next Wednesday on Robert Mueller Testimony Day. Oh, how the talk show gods are smiling. No, I'm doing Larry Elder filling in for Larry today, meaning I get to drop you off gingerly at work today, and then I get to pick you up and Uber you home here on the radio on the Larry Elder Show this very afternoon slash evening from 5 to 8. So there's already we're loaded for topical bear with all kinds of stuff with the week that we've already had. Who knows what'll happen this week? And we'll load that up and get ready for launch on the Larry Elder Show this afternoon at 5, going all the way till 8, right here on 660 AM. The Answer. But that's then. This is now. And right now, it's Friday.
Wow! I feel good. I feel good. Ow! I feel good.
I feel good.
I feel good.
You want me to say I feel good?
I feel good.
I would not.
Wow! You know, we need right about now is some harmonica. For some gin blossoms. Little follow you down.
Did you see the sky?
These guys.
Maybe one less time is all we need.
I guess their blip of time in the early 90s kind of came and went.
I can't really help it if my tongue's all tied in knots.
Because I go to Mike Gallagher and I go, hey, Mike. And I don't expect him to be familiar with Gin Blossoms frontman Robin Wilson, who is 54 today. But the Gin Blossoms library, just a little bit of that. Hey, Jealousy, Found Out About You, Follow You Down, Till I Hear It From You. I mean, they got 4 or 5 records that got played that still get played. No. I guess Uncle Mike was immersed in show tunes. I don't know. But it got me thinking about the Blossoms, so I offered up a little bit right there to begin this hour. All right, so. Let me begin this hour with something else. And this is one of my favorite stories of yesterday. Let's go back to July 4th. You remember the wonderful, wonderful opportunity that the president had to salute all of our armed forces. And I mean all of them. The Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marines, and the Coast Guard. I hear every once in a while from Coast Guard families, and I don't want to say they walk around thinking that, you know, that they get short shrift, but you know what? I think they do. You are every bit as much in the United States military as you are in any of the other services. And the reason I bring this up is, and just, okay, excuse me for just 5 seconds. I'm sorry. There's just no proper synonym. Do you know how badass the Coast Guard is? Do you know what they sometimes do and sometimes have to do? So thank you. Pardon the PG-13 moment, but hey, it kind of worked. Because if you see what I'm talking about, and if you listen to what I'm about to share with you, you'll know and you will agree. The Coast Guard, a Coast Guard cutter, the Munro, is out a couple hundred miles. It's international waters, but if there's the notion that, hey, there's some smuggling going on here, we can do some things in international waters. So if a U.S. Coast Guard vessel here's where we wind up. A Coast Guard guy jumps off his ship and onto the top of a submarine churning along at the same high rate of speed and starts banging on the hatch at the top of the... I guess it wasn't like a full-on submarine, because the first thing I thought is, well, why don't you just submerge and drown this guy if you're trying to, you know, avoid the Coast Guard interdiction. But it is what is apparently called, and I just need to bone up on this because this is... I might need one of these. A semi-submersible. A semi-submersible. Meaning it goes underwater, sort of. And that's exactly it. It churns along with only the uppermost, it's only its uppermost profile above the waterline, which makes it real popular with drug smugglers because it's not a big old fishing boat you can spot as easy as pie. Well, the Coast Guard found it and said, what the heck is that? And so they churn over to it, and the thing is humming along, and they're humming along, and they're not idling. I mean, they are moving and grooving. And this guy, a crew member, jumps on top of this mostly submerged vessel as it's moving, and bam, 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 and they're screaming at it in Spanish. And going way out on a limb here, and they're screaming at it in Spanish, and so it stopped in Spanish, and they opened the hatch in Spanish, and inside they found 17,000 pounds of cocaine. Whoa, Coast Guard. So I just want you to just enjoy this. This is a huge shout out to the Coast Guard, a huge shout out to everybody involved in drug interdiction. And Matt Gutman was standing on like a pier in Santa Monica to intro this wonderful, wonderful story.
Those semi-submersibles are nearly impossible to spot in the Pacific. So sometimes the Coast Guard, thousands of miles offshore, has to rely on surveillance planes and intel. But to actually board those boats, as you see in this video, that requires a high-speed chase on the high seas and a good bit of courage.
With one officer screaming in Spanish for the suspected cocaine smugglers to stop their boat.
Okay, first of all, like they can hear him. It's like, what? You're inside a tin can. Well, actually, you're inside a massive insulated can because it's 90% underwater. And I think the likelihood of them hearing yelling outside, but again, it certainly does add to the effect. And if they couldn't necessarily hear the yelling, they certainly heard the member of the Coast Guard crew that jumps on top of the sub and starts banging on the hatch.
Coast Guard skiff slams in the surf.
It's going to be hard to get on.
Yeah. Two guardsmen in full tactical gear daringly hopping onto that semi-submersible going full steam.
Dude.
They crab walk to the hatch, one guardsman slamming his fist down. Inside that sub's belly, five suspects hauling more than 17,000 pounds of cocaine worth about $230 million. The captain of that Coast Guard cutter says the submarine-like boat can be almost impossible to spot except from above.
We had airplanes that located this thing earlier than the day, and we had to travel a good amount of ground, about a little over 200 nautical miles.
That is Captain James Estramonte, commanding officer of the USS Monroe. Bless his heart.
Reach it before sunset.
One official saying that stopping one of these so-called narco subs is like hunting a white whale. ABC News got exclusive...
Technically, probably not a USS, Coast Guard cutter, Monroe.
Access to one of these recent high seas drug busts, the suspected drug smugglers tossing giant bales of cocaine off their boat as they tried to evade the Coast Guard. Finally, they surrendered and were cuffed. It's a huge haul and heart-stopping video, but for the Coast Guard, these cocaine busts are common off South and Central America.
Our ship alone interdicted 11 different vessels and then a number of other Coast Guard assets that were down in the same theater of operations. And so we had over 50,000 pounds of cocaine and heroin on the deck to turn into the DEA.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. And I know it's shoveling sand against the tide sometimes, but every one of these operations that you stop, you know, in some way collectively might dissuade the next folks who enter. I have a question. I don't quite know how to delicately ask this, but how much is cocaine these days? I'm not shopping, trust me. But they said that it was 17,000 pounds of cocaine, estimated street value $232 million. So whipping out the calculator, that's $13,647 a pound. What? Which comes out to about $800 an ounce. What? Now, if there's one thing I'm proud of, I am not conversant about the street price of an ounce of cocaine. It's got to be more than $800 an ounce. I mean, that's a lot of coke. So is this stuff, the only things I know from everything everybody says is the pot is getting stronger. I have no idea what's going on with the price of pot. I can tell you about that in the early 80s. Today, not so much. Never been familiar with the cocaine marketplace, looking to keep that streak alive. But I wonder if they might have really seriously undervalued that street value. And I know that every time we start to look at the notion of the quote unquote war on drugs, and everybody, and you could look at this and look at this particular semi submersible and how we managed to stop. I mean, just how 17,000 pounds of cocaine that will not be on the streets of the United States, which is awesome. Now, I'm sure there's 100,000 pounds that will, that the Coast Guard didn't catch yesterday, alone, perhaps. But I look at this, think about the war on bank robbery. Think about the war on speeding. We have laws against certain things, and we stop some people who do it. You get less of what you make illegal. And for too long, the bar has been set at, well, we don't stop all of it. Well, I know we don't stop all of it. We darn well stop some of it. And the fact that we're stopping some of it and the fact that we're locking people up for things stops a ton of people from doing it. That's why you have things that are illegal. All right, 866-660-5759. It was almost a rhetorical question, but I'm starting to get some coke calls. This is funny. The whole my familiarity with this extends only to articles, and which is what all of our familiarity should be. None of it should be from firsthand use, but from what recreational drugs people are doing these days, my great hope is that lessens from time to time, that it's on a curve pointing downward, and in some demographics and with some drugs, it is, but with others, it's just not. And even if there's like a downturn in the use of coke and a downturn in the use of heroin and a downturn in the use of meth and an upturn in the use of pot, gee, I wonder why. Overall, I want people to do less of this poison. And ultimately, it's funny. I just stumbled across this on the current rabbit hole that I'm working my way down. I just finished the wonderful J.D. Vance book, Hillbilly Elegy. It's been out for a couple of years. Hugh Hewitt spoke glowingly of it. So has everybody else. And now I will, too, because it's remarkable. J.D. Vance is like in his early 30s. What's a guy in his early 30s doing writing a memoir? Well, here's why. His life was a wreck. He came from the hills and hollers of Kentucky. And with a family that was beyond dysfunctional, but they had a kind of what he calls kind of a hillbilly ethic of loyalty and fairness and support, even while they were involved in personal misbehavior, huge multiple failed and violent marriages, huge abuse of alcohol and drugs. And yet they were devoted to each other in a way that gave J.D. Vance a shot to look around and examine the world. And he gets out of high school and is ready to go to Ohio State because his grades are barely good enough to go to Ohio State. But he looks around at his 18 years of life and says, I am in no way ready for college. So you know what he does? Joins the Marines. Boom. Grows up fast. Comes out of the Marines, ready for college, ready for life. Turned his life around. Went to Yale Law School and is now an attorney and an author of some import. Hillbilly Elegy, not eulogy. That's what you do for dead people. An elegy is like a poetic tribute. And anyway, the reason I bring this up is he talks a ton about drugs and personal responsibility and the way people wreck their lives with these habits. So I can't recommend Hillbilly Elegy enough. In fact, you know, we may do Mark's Reader's Corner before we're done, because there's at one point he's a teenager going to work at a grocery store, just trying to lift up out of this horrible hand of cards he's been dealt. And he has some observations, even as a teenage boy, about what some folks are doing with food stamps. Give them a little eye toward the welfare culture. So let's do that 9 o'clock hour somewhere, shall we? Coming up right after 8:35, our buddy Scott Braddock from the Quorum Report is going to join us. We'll talk some Texas politics. Are we in danger of turning purple? We'll talk about two guys named West. Alan West, a Republican who's running to be the statewide chairman of the Republican Party, and Royce West, familiar local state senator, who might be thinking of running against Cornyn for the U.S. Senate. We'll talk about all of that with Scott Braddock at 8:35. But let's talk about some stuff with you next. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. The technological lesson is it's tough to go from the voice effects thing to the laptop button and fade up Walter Egan doing a little Magnet and Steel. From 1978, Walter Egan, his one hit you remember. He is 71 today. Know who that is doing some of the background vocals on this? Oh, gee, that sounds like Lindsey Buckingham. You'd be correct about that. Oh, is that Stevie Nicks alongside? Yes, it is. So a little quality help there. For a quality record, Magnet and Steel, Walter Egan from 1978. Okay, well, let's hop into the news on time. Let's do that. 866-660-5759. We got people calling us about cocaine with the cocaine interdiction there on the high seas. We got a number of other folks making references to the Coast Guard and this and that and thus and such. But I'll tell you what, let's hop into the Quorum Report and its editor, Scott Braddock, talk some Texas politics and things going on. So just a multi-topic Friday, the kind I love. It is 8:30. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. Here's Gordon Griffin. So what could add to an already busy news day? What's another awesome thing we could do? I think we ought to take a look at some Texas politics. Yeah. Let's do it. Little jars of clay and liquid. Because as we immerse ourselves in the census, citizenship question, and all kinds of stuff going on the global scene, et cetera, the hum, the parade of Texas politics never really stops. And there's some wonderful places to check up on that. And among them is Quorum Report. Check them out. Their Twitter feed is at Quorum, Q-U-O-R-U-M, Quorum Report. And their editor is my pal, Scott Braddock, who joins us to look at a couple of things. Hey, Scott, how are you? Great to have you. Much appreciated. So, and everybody, hop on to Scott Braddock's Twitter feed at Scott Braddock. All right. So, Alan West running for state GOP chair.
Oh, yeah.
What are the prospects on that? And that just how does that shape up? And is the incumbent interested in keeping that seat? I mean, just how does that shape up?
I'm trying to think, Mark, how many Republican Party of Texas chairman races I have covered at this point, and I've lost track. It's always a lot of fun, you know, to see the folks who want to lead the official Republican Party apparatus. You know, they will talk about what their vision is for the Republican Party, and over the last decade or so, you have had candidates talk about basically two things. One is party purity and adherence to the party platform, mm-hmm. which sometimes can be good and sometimes can get a little over the top. And then two, the idea that the Republican Party should be a backstop for Republican candidates when they're trying to beat Democrats, that they should be creating infrastructure and raising money so that they can do that. And when the Republican Party is so dominant in Texas as it has been over the course of a generation, it's, you know, a little more of a comfortable situation for Republicans. They can have the intra-party fights and talk about, you know, things like censuring the former speaker and things like that. But moving forward, I think the conversation is going to be more about the latter, about, you know, trying to backstop those Republican candidates. So James Dickey, the current Republican chairman, to your question. He absolutely wants to keep that seat. He's already out there campaigning. He was making campaign stops, what I would call campaign stops, media appearances in West Texas over this past week. And Alan West putting out this YouTube video in which he talked about the idea that the Republican Party of Texas was established by African Americans without saying it. He's an African American, of course. When I talked to some grassroots conservatives, Mark, they said that he didn't really give all that great a reason why there needs to be a shift in leadership of the Republican Party. So I think we'll see that conversation emerge. Dickey has admitted that after the 2018 elections, the Republicans have to do better with certain groups and in certain geographic areas, right? In the suburbs, where the Democrats were certainly ascendant in 2018, and then, of course, with specific voting groups like minorities and female voters as well.
All right. So, and that takes me directly to the first step in analyzing this potential race. Scott Braddock with us from Quorum Report. And the first question I had, and I asked everybody, does James Dickey have a problem? Is he unpopular? Are there people who want to sweep him away? Because I love Alan West. He is an actual friend of mine, but I've got to shelve all of that. I've got to put all of that aside and observe this in a vacuum. And I've said often about publicly elected offices, ask Kay Bailey Hutchison. You can be a very big deal, but that doesn't mean you're going to win. She got stomped by Rick Perry. And it wasn't because we didn't love Kay. It's because we were fine with her in Washington and fine with Rick as governor. So if there are enough people who are just fine with James Dickey, then we love Alan, but he's not going to win. So, but if he is going to win, it's because there are enough people who grew dissatisfied with James Dickey. So, is he strong? Are there? Because Alan says, well, I hear rumbles. Listen, everybody can hear rumbles about something. Yeah. You can always find malcontents. But what is the status quo of James Dickey's incumbency?
I think the big question will be results, right? If you look at the fact that on James Dickey's watch, and sometimes this isn't even the office holder's fault, a lot of times it's not, but if you look at the results that happen on their watch, that can raise questions among the people who make the decision, which of course in this case are the delegates to the Republican Party convention next year. And when they look at the fact that Democrats picked up 12 seats in the Texas House last year, 2 seats in the Texas Senate last year, 2 seats in Congress in Texas last year, and Beto O'Rourke came within 3 points of Ted Cruz in that Senate race, the most expensive U.S. Senate race in American history. When you look at all of that, it will give some of those delegates some pause about the Republican Party's leadership. So he's going to have to make the case that Dickey's going to have to make the case that he can do better going forward. And I would think West would make the argument that, no, we need to have somebody else. And it comes down to, as a radio talk show host, You've moderated these debates, facilitated these debates, and I know you have an opinion about it. When it comes to these things, there's the question of, are Republicans losing because they're not conservative enough, or is it because they aren't appealing to a broader swath of the greater population?
Yeah, I mean, that's the eternal question.
Right.
So if you take a look at, real quick, just time out, breaking news, Scott, you'll appreciate this. Secretary Alex Acosta, who we thought had dodged the bullet with his press conference, et cetera, with the notion of his connection to a decade ago and the plea deal for Jeffrey Epstein, Secretary Acosta is going to step down. Secretary Alex Acosta will step down 1 week from 1 week from today, apparently, and I'll get back into that story. Any thoughts on that while I got you?
Well, probably not surprising. I mean, I don't think the president was thrilled with all of the incoming fire they were taking about that, about the questions about Acosta and his role in setting up that, what a lot of people have described as that sweetheart deal for Epstein in Florida. And so I think they wanted to just move on.
Yeah, I think it's funny because as the questions arose as to what President Trump's level of confidence in Alex Acosta was, I know he saw that through just one lens. Does this guy help me or does he hurt me as I try to get reelected? So I guess the ultimate decision was that he was a burden not worth hanging on to.
Yes, and everybody moving as quickly as they can. But by the way, on the Republican and Democratic side, away from anything to do with Epstein, light speed to get away from
it.
Him.
You know it. All right. So to wrap up the state Republican chair race, if it's not going to be a referendum on how much we love Alan West, how much conservatives love Alan West, that is beyond doubt. We're only going to sweep James Dickey away. And again, this is not a public vote. The state doesn't vote. The people who do vote will be at the when is the convention and where is that next summer?
That will be in Houston. I don't have the dates in front of me, but it's probably in the middle of the summer.
Exactly. And boy, that'll be just a hotbed of issues. We'll know who the Democrat is running against Trump. And I guess the last thing I want to ask you about that is if it's a what have you done for us lately thing, it's not James Dickey's fault, those seats lost. That was the one-time total fluke Beto O'Rourke buzzsaw. It's not James Dickey's fault that Beto came within 2.5 points of Cruz. It's not James Dickey's fault. But, I mean, is that just sometimes life's unfair?
Sometimes life's unfair, and, you know, it's not your fault that you have your car broken into. It's not your fault that, you know, your house gets broken into, but then people want to know who's going to put up the best security system.
Yes. He's the king of metaphor. It's Scott Bradigan.
I'm giving it a shot here.
That's right. At Quorum Report. All right, let's talk about another person named West, another African-American, but politically different. Democrat Royce West, a remarkable political talent.
Sure.
I've been around him a few times. I can't not like him. I mean, I always try to get along well with everybody. And I think that makes him a formidable candidate. He has been. But again, what's the level of speculation that he might join MJ Hagar, an interesting woman, in the Democrat primary to ultimately take on John Cornyn?
John Cornyn had a great comment on this week. You had, for months, we've heard at Buzz Central, a Quorum Report, that West has been sort of testing the waters with people close to him, asking what they thought about him running for statewide office for U.S. Senate, and he's gotten mixed feedback on that. But Cornyn said, look, West is the only one of all these Democrats that you just named, Mark, West, the only one who actually has a record of public service as a Texas senator. And Cornyn said, quote, I think some of the Democrats in Texas are getting a little tired of having Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and the National Democratic Party try to pick their nominee. You know, there was all that speculation about whether or not Beto O'Rourke would maybe drop out of the presidential race as he continues to falter and then switch and run for U.S. Senate, which he could do, by the way. The deadline for that is the beginning of December. But with West, it seems to be, from all of the sourcing that I have, Mark, that it's something he's very serious about. Of course, the question is fundraising. We mentioned here on the show just a bit ago that U.S. Senate race last year, the most expensive in United States history. And one of the things that O'Rourke did with that fluke, as you described it, was set the bar very high for not only the performance of going to all 254 counties across two time zones at least once, and more than that for some of those counties, doing all that, but also raising so much money. I mean, they are talking about needing to, out of the gate, get to $15-20 million to be competitive, because that's just the reality. And I think West has something like $2 million in his account, which, by the way, he cannot transfer from the state account to a federal account.
No, my.
So he'd have to figure out where those donors would be. I think there's a little more to it than the fluke of O'Rourke, although that's absolutely right. There are three things, basically, that happened in 2018, I think, that created that environment, a confluence of events. You have backlash to President Trump, which, look, when people either love Trump or hate Trump, it's pretty much baked in what they think about Trump, right? I mean, whichever side you're talking to. I think that he created, I like to describe folks out there as either civilians or combatants when it comes to politics. I think Trump has converted a lot of civilians to combatants. That's where a lot of these new voters came from. You also had backlash to Senator Cruz, who, as you know, is not always even the most popular among some Republicans, so there was some weakness there with Cruz. And then you have that sort of Beto fluke as well. Of course, Cruz not on the ballot, but Trump will be. And we had voting at 8.4 million in Texas, as you know, Mark, which is a presidential-level number in 2018. So what does that mean for next year? Does that mean that we've sort of topped out at 8.4, or does it, you know, maybe we see voting at 9 or 9.5 million, or do we see voting way higher than that, at 10 million, 15 million? Who knows the answer? And I think this is what Republicans and Democrats alike, and I don't think anybody's really wrapped their mind around this, Mark. I would still expect that President Trump would win Texas next year, knock on wood. You know, all the polls in 2016 were correct, right? And everybody knew exactly what was going to happen. I'm out of the business of making predictions. But President Trump won Texas by 9 points over Hillary Clinton. Let's say he wins, you know, by 6 points or 5 points. What does that mean down ballot, especially when you factor in that we don't have one-punch straight ticket voting anymore and each candidate has to really, you know, sink or swim on their own? No one has gotten their brain around this. What if President Trump wins, but he wins Texas by 52 points? What does that mean for every other Republican, including Cornyn, congressional races, you know, state House, state Senate, et cetera? Huge question marks.
All right. Well, listen, answering those questions every day at QuorumReport.com and on their Twitter feed at Quorum Report and also at Scott Braddock. Scott, we need to do this more often. It's always enlightening, and I much appreciate you.
On that, we fully agree. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Scott Braddock, always interesting and always there at QuorumReport.com. All right, what the heck led to Alex Acosta's decision to step aside? Well, I think we kind of know. What's the one thing you always hear about these folks? They serve at the pleasure of the president. Well, if the president is no longer experiencing pleasure, that's probably a bad way to phrase that, but if he's no longer pleased that you're there, all right, let's. And our old, eternal, forever friend, Bill Bennett, was on the TV box a moment ago talking about the Alex Acosta exit. Let's listen into that. A little breaking news next. Alex Acosta out as labor secretary. Apparently did not dodge the stain of the Jeffrey Epstein plea deal more than a decade ago. 850 Mark Davis, 660 AM The Answer. That's more like it. All right. 856-866-660-5759. Reaction starting to form on the breaking news of just the last few minutes. Secretary Alex Acosta stepping down as labor secretary within a week. Get to some of that here in a second. Lots of calls on other stuff that's going on. Let's go to Arlington. Hey, Betty, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm glad to hear that Alan West is running, because I have friends that have been high up in the Republican Party, and they've expressed to me they're very disappointed in James Dickey.
Why?
So I'm glad that...
Why?
Pardon?
Why?
You know, I really don't know the specifics, but they're up there close and personal,
and they have
been very disappointed.
Well, do me a favor, okay? A little bit of show homework, because if these are friends of yours, ask them why, and then either A, call me back and tell me what the why is, or have them do so, because I'm really trying to put my thumb on the pulse here and see if there is a, because again, this is an insider's, political insider's vote that'll take place at the convention next year. And if there are enough people who want to get rid of James Dickey, then Alan West is going to win. If there aren't, then he won't. And that's the one mystery factor, is I have zero concept of whether it's just a few people with sour grapes or if there's a sufficient groundswell of I will tell you, if there were a big groundswell of dissatisfaction, I kind of think I would have heard about it, and I haven't. That's not a mathematical truth, but it's just kind of an anecdotal thing. But let me know about that in any kind of time frame you like.
Well, I think the results speak for themselves of the last election cycle.
Just stop. There is not a GOP chairman in the universe that could have fended off the Beto buzzsaw. It is in zero way James Dickey's fault that the bunch of Republicans fell by the wayside up against the Beto buzzsaw. It is in no way his fault.
Here's the point I want to make. Mm-hmm. We're going to fall on the sword if we don't. If we don't reach out to the Black Americans and let them know just how badly this illegal immigration invasion is going to hurt them, and I know they already know this, we've got to focus on that, because I've talked to several Black Americans just casually standing in line. They're not happy that they're having to learn Spanish to get a job. They're not happy.
Exactly right. And there is, and it's funny, I don't know to what degree this is true. Does a Black conservative state Republican chair do better delivering that message? To some extent, I think that answer is probably yes. But it's going to be a long way between now and that convention. But do me a favor, Betty, have them call me, you give me a buzz, because I'm trying to assess Mr. Dickey's strength in that role and see how popular or unpopular he might be, and thus how vulnerable he might be to the Alan West challenge for state Republican chair. All right, well, it's 8:59 now, so let me hop into the news. Got SRN for the network level, got Gordon, and then Bill Bennett, our friend Bill Bennett, the first on the national tube to talk about the decision by Secretary Alex Acosta to step down. The heat just got too much. Life's unfair. I think that's what I've been calling everybody. Get off Alex Acosta's back. I think his explanation for that 2008 plea deal, I think, makes perfect sense. But sometimes that's not the way politics works. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 859.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.